Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
Welcome to the Monday edition of the Deep Dive. Hope you guys all had an amazing Thanksgiving weekend. I certainly had I sweated it out in Southern California. We had like record temperatures this weekend. How about you, Andy? Did you have a great Thanksgiving?
It was lovely. Traditional meal at my dad's house, and then casino trip on Friday, and then back home, and to be just confused all weekend about what day it was every day I woke up. I don't deal well with getting out of the structure of the week, I think.
Well,
I had like Sunday scaries on Friday night. Yeah. I couldn't tell you what day it was at any point in the day.
I'll tell you what, man. Certainly didn't affect your handicapping. What a card you put out there. You were killing it this week, man. You had a dead-on read all over the place. You were the champion nice of the McAllen's Thanksgiving Challenge. The only one of us who came up a positive there, so that was good. Good job by you, although we were a Kirk Cousins touchdown away from just a spectacular Sunday for me. But, I mean, challenge at least.
I took the pussy route and just – I went safe. And
yeah.
And actually, honestly, I mean, that's what works in handicapping for the most part, I guess, if you want to get down to it. But
yeah, you can approach it different ways, but yeah, that's one way. It didn't really feel like any of your sides were all that close, to be honest with you. I was looking, I guess Tennessee, you had Tennessee, right? That was maybe
a little close
there.
I really, obviously, I've mentioned this before as far as like Indianapolis in the second half. I expected a close game and then the Titans to kind of just, you know, be a better team as they are and pull away in the second half. I didn't think the pulling away in the second half was going to have to be the, you know, come back from a double-digit deficit comeback kind of thing.
Right, right.
But, I mean, that's how I saw it was a, you know, a heavy second half Titans. But at that point, I even thought I might take Titans second half, but once they got down, it felt like I was chasing, and I didn't want to, you know, make things worse. It was nice to get that one.
Yeah, nice job, man. Well, I'm an NBA handicapper now. I have completely lost my feel for
as we pivot to NBA as the spring approaches.
I'm gonna have to rebrand the whole podcast. We are now the NBA gambling podcast. No, my feel for the NFL has never really been, you know, this. I haven't felt this lost in the looking at an NFL card in a long time. I've failed to kind of adapt to the new way the league is apparently. And, I looked at last week's card and I was like, you know what? Some of these bad teams aren't as bad as the books think. And some of these good teams aren't as good as the books think. And they hung 13.5, 16.5, all kinds of heavy duty numbers out there. And I grabbed the points in a lot of these spots. And pretty much swung and missed, other than a handful of totals I hit. I hit the under on Philly and hit the over in the night game in Green Bay. We were both on the Rams, and that was a fun one. You want to start a little bit on the Rams Saints? Talk about what you thought. Did you watch all that game?
I did. I watched pretty much all of that game, and boy, it was. If you're not on the Kamara train yet.
Good God,
not to just lead right into the team that I bet against, and you know, I faded that team, but if it weren't for him, I mean, they weren't really, they weren't really, I mean, there was a couple longer ones on that, there was that soft drive at the end where they did score, and they had some nice longer passes, but they, especially in the first half, they had Breeze on a leash there as far as,
they did.
It was a lot of short dink and dunk stuff, and that's not... I don't think he's injured. I think he's fine. It's just, I think that was the game plan. We're going to matriculate down the field here. And boy, that a couple of those Kamara runs were just spectacular. He's kind of carrying that offense right now, the way he's breaking tackles. I mean, he turning, there's one where the guy had him by the ankle pretty much for, you know, at the best case, like a 1 yard loss. I think he ran for a first down on that play.
Yeah. Like 11 yards. I saw that.
Just making stuff happen. He looked great, but boy, McVay put together a good game plan.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams offense looked real good. They stopped a good New Orleans offense a couple times. The defense looked good too. Made him settle for a field goal a couple times when You know, the drives were looking good, and that, I mean, that was the difference.
Although when you're down 14 points and it's the fourth quarter and you have Drew Brees at the goal line, I don't know why the hell Sean Payton is kicking a field goal there. That was one of the coaching decisions I saw the weekend.
Yeah, very surprised there.
Let me ask you a little bit more about first of all, wholeheartedly agree about Kamara. Like, I think he touched the ball like 11 times or something, and that wasn't nearly enough. He was destroying the Rams in that game. They had no ability to make a tackle on him in the open field, and it looks like he's going to be a pretty special player in this league. He's going to lock up the offensive rookie of the year. What did you make?
Yeah, it's been a few years now since he's been out of Georgia, but boy, I mean, Gurley and Kamara, they're good. Yeah,
they're good.
Five years from now, that might be, you know, the best two running backs in the league when some of these older guys, you know, the Adrian Petersons of the Arizona, he didn't have a bad day, but no, it's still Bell's world, boy. I mean, going way ahead. That guy had all-purpose yards coming out of his ass yesterday.
Sure did, man. And so, you know, we see this play out here. Rams, like, it was kind of a bizarre game, even though, like, the Rams had never really felt like they were at risk. Saints are scary to bet against, you know, Drew Brees is the fourth quarter magic, as we saw, you know, just a week ago. But, like, there was a point in time where they were up by, like, 13 points, but they had only converted, like, 2 out of 10 third downs. And as we mentioned, as good as Kamara was, the Rams tackling was kind of suspect. So I don't want to make too much of the Rams covering here. I think that they were the right side, and I think I'm glad that we got them under a field goal. That was absolutely the right bet. But you know, are the Rams better than the Saints if they played again in New Orleans in the second round of the playoffs? Or are we backing the Rams? I'm not sure.
No, I think it was, you know, just at home in the spot, needing a win to keep their breathing room in the NFC West there, and then also the Saints have such an emotional comeback win. That was one of those games where the spot kind of matched up. But yeah, you're right. In maybe other situations, you could even back the road team in that kind of series. It's funny how all these teams are just playing each other. All the playoff teams play each other. You know, obviously just because three of them are in the same division as far as teams that are racing, but I mean, the Rams just played the Vikings, the Rams just played New Orleans, the Vikings play Atlanta and Carolina, the Eagles,
the Eagles go Seattle and then the Rams.
Seattle and the Rams. I mean, everybody, the Vikings and Rams, or Vikings and Eagles are like, if that might be the only matchup you get in the playoffs that's not a rematch. There's so many teams playing each other right now, and the Saints are the only ones, you know, who took a step back with that loss.
Yeah, Falcons, Eagles, Vikings,
everybody. Saints are the only team. It was Rams, Vikings, Eagles, Carolina, Panthers, won. Falcons.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody took a step forward. Seattle,
one other team took a step backwards. And it was the Detroit Lions. Vikings finally get a W versus the Lions. That was pretty cool. Again, it never really felt like the game was in play for the Lions, but it also never really felt like it was out of reach. I mean, maybe you saw them throw the flag on that last field goal attempt when they blocked it and ran it back for a touchdown.
I didn't. The camera angle, you didn't see the guy coming off the edge. I was very.
You had a little heart in your throat moment there.
I had turkey coming back up. I wasn't in a good place for like 5 seconds.
You're like, no way. How the hell? How did they do this? Because, I mean, it still wouldn't have been the end of the game. It would have been tied 30-30. But boy, did that looked like a big problem. And then
they showed the replay and he was offsides by.
By a mile. Yeah, if they're on a different camera angle, you're not even remotely sweating that. But you know what's funny is the only bet I cashed actually on Thursday was my Lions Giants teaser, and that teaser does not cash if that guy does not jump off sides to block the field goal to run back the touchdown. If they just let Minnesota kick the field goal without trying to desperately hard to get a block in, they win by 10, and that they bust that teaser. So that was pretty hysterical. And because the offsides gave them an automatic first down, they were able to kneel out the game and keep that thing inside 8, which is what I needed. Or they have 8.5, whatever. I just needed it not to be 10. That was pretty spectacular. It ended up being the only thing I won all day Thursday. The Vikings, though, now take a clear step forward in front of the Saints. Not only do they have the tiebreaker from week one, but now they have a game ahead of them. So you got to be feeling pretty good about the Vikes locking up a bye here. And I think that's going to be important. These teams, as I look across the NFC top and you know, let's be honest, the AFC is a freaking train wreck and the NFC is awesome. Like, I would say right now, probably 6 out of the 7 best teams are probably NFC teams. Maybe 7 out of the top 8. I don't know where you put Pittsburgh, but I would probably take most of these teams in the playoff race in the NFC versus Pittsburgh on a neutral field right now, just because of the inconsistency we see out of the Steelers. But if you look at the
AFC. Let's time machine here. Jump to January 6th and 7th, and you've got wild card weekend. You've got Falcons. Going to the Rams, Panthers.
Oh my God, so
going
good.
To Panthers going to the Superdome.
Very very good.
But then in those 2 days, you have the Bills in Nashville and the Jaguars in Kansas City. Those are much less appealing games. And it's not like, you know, and I have a bet, and I also am
contracting AFC.
But let's say the Ravens get in instead of the Bills. You got Ravens, Titans, or Jaguars going to the Chargers
maybe. Yeah. Chiefs maybe there's, get in. Yeah, all majorly flawed teams. All, yeah, huge flaws. So back to the NFC picture for a second. I mean, I don't think, based on how they're playing at this moment, it is 100% fair to hold Philadelphia above the rest. Like, that is not, I'm not going to fight anyone over that. I have significant questions about whether Philadelphia is going to be this good in a month or in 2 months, just because we typically see teams that kind of are having this level of success for the first time and are kind of, you know, burning out some of their, you know, some of their better looks in the regular season tend to flame out a little bit come January. And now I'm not necessarily calling that for the Eagles.
I am.
Although in full disclosure, the Eagles are about the only team in the NFC where I have some liability in terms of I don't really have anything covering my ass if they were to go to the Super Bowl. I've got a lot of other looks in the NFC sprinkled. Grabbed lines of teams that I felt like were going to be in the hunt when they were a little bit down this season. That does not include Philly. So if Philly ends up going all the way, I'm going to be licking my wounds on Super Bowl weekend from my NFC futures.
Philly's done. Yeah. They're toast. I tweeted it out today. They did the Super Bowl shuffle during the season.
Yeah, that's
and that, maybe a lot of people are too young for that, but I mean, if you have never seen it, do yourself a favor right now. Pause it. Maybe just pause it right now on YouTube, the Super Bowl shuffle, because it is so freaking awful.
But it's funny.
Like Jim McMahon. I can picture him like that.
With the sunglasses on.
And I think maybe a headband. Yeah, he was something.
It's brutal.
They weren't there to cause no trouble.
Nope. There's like the short version where they're doing the dance, and then there's like the long version where everybody has like a rap.
They have like their own verse.
A rap verse? Yeah. No. It's absolutely brutal.
I might stop recording right now just to watch that. But yeah, that's a pretty good way to curse your season. You don't do the Super Bowl shuffle after you embarrass...
The Bears. Yeah, really.
Ooh, the Bears.
Although this is good for the Bears in the long run. I'm sorry. If you're a Bears fan, you need to get John Fox the F out of there so you can get a coach in there who can properly develop a quarterback. We saw in one season how much coaching matters in the Rams going from Jeff Fisher to Sean McVay and what... You know, how that's turned Goff into a viable quarterback from someone who literally looked like one of the biggest busts of all time. I could see some pretty strong improvement from Trubisky next season if they get a guy in there who has a scheme and a vision for a modern passing offense, not whatever the hell John Fox is running right now in Chicago. We got a good one on Sunday with Philly. They've been home for a while. I think they've had they played at Dallas, but they've had a lot of home games of recent.
I was going to say they will probably get the same amount as most other teams in the long run.
In the long run, they will. But of recent, it's been they've had a lot of home games. They now head out to a double dip on the West Coast. Philly, if you look at Philly's schedule, it's been weird. Like the way that the schedule makers kind of have had them concentrating home and away and doing these trips. It hasn't affected them, obviously. They're 10-1. But here they go now. Sunday night they're playing at Seattle. It's in the late spot. Some would say that's an advantage for Seattle. We know what Seattle's like in primetime games in terms of that stadium and that atmosphere. And we know what Carson Wentz has been able to do on the road this season. So it's not obvious to me that there's a clear side here. I wanted to back Philly because I felt like because they are specifically clicking in every way right now, and because the matchups that their defensive line are going to have on the Seattle offensive line are going to make it for a very long day for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, meanwhile, he won yesterday against the Niners, but boy, he threw some more real questionable passes. I threw that poll up on the on who's going to be the odd team out in the NFC, and I was surprised, overwhelming support that Seattle's going to be the seventh team that does not go to the playoffs. And boy, if Russell Wilson is dinged up, then that's all you need right there. They go at Seattle next week, they're at the Rams, then they're at the Giants. So the Eagles are on this road.
Everybody's had a game or two where they impressed, and Seattle maybe at home against the Colts where they beat the tar out of them, but they lost to Tennessee. They had an ugly, ugly win against the San Francisco Niners early in the season.
Yeah.
The thing where they let the Texans score 38, and granted Watson was amazing, at home to the Skins. The shootout with Atlanta at home again. They weren't impressive against Arizona, I didn't think either. They are a dangerous team in the playoffs. So I was talking to somebody about that all these other Zimmer, McVay, Peterson. How many playoff games have they coached?
Yeah.
Sean Payton, Pete Carroll,
Ron Rivera, those are your, and I guess Dan Quinn, the AFC South coaches. And,
yeah, they have some experience.
And Pete Carroll are going to be your experienced playoff coaches come January. And it's going to be flipped on its head because they're all going to be on the road or they're going to be playing wild card weekend. So it's wide open in the NFC. Let me throw this out because you brought up Deshaun Watson in that Texas game at Seattle.
He's hurt.
Texans game. He's out. He's got a torn ACL, sadly. Ruined part of the AFC drama for us there with that bummer of an injury. But the way that the Seattle defense played that game and against that quarterback who they couldn't tackle, that's what concerns me away from backing Seattle in this spot. Carson Wentz has again and again shown this unique escapability. His escapability rating is like Houdini level. And the Seattle defense fully healthy. I would love to see, just take a crack at Wentz. But they're having to do so much. They're having to do. They're asking their linebackers to do so much to make up for who they have lost in the secondary at this point, that I just worry Carson Wentz is going to have the time he needs to put up the kind of points that we saw Deshaun Watson put up against this team. So I'm looking at probably backing Philly here as long as it stays under 6 points, because I do think they win this thing by a touchdown.
This is where the NFL's got your head in such a blender, dude.
Oh,
where,
of course.
Where you're finally, like, 3 weeks too late, you're going to take, like, six favorites.
Six favorites, of course.
Because the handicapping says, like, this is a spot for Seattle, but it was
without
also
a doubt.
Spot, it was a spot for the Bears.
Yeah,
was,
right.
You know, just keep going back on, like, Philly games. Oh, and, you know, you talk about Cam, we talked about the camera angle on the Vikes game. What game was that where he, maybe it was the Skins game, again, not the golf, but where he was, no, maybe Dallas. I'm trying to think. He was sacked. Like, everybody was on top of him. The whole line collapsed. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he popped out of there. And
yeah,
just
that was,
started,
yeah,
just
that
started
was,
running down the field for like 20 yards.
That was it. That was Wentz versus the Skins on that Monday
Skins,
Night Football
yeah.
game. Yeah,
and then
they had
they showed, they showed the different camera angles.
Exploded out, and he had 3 yards.
You've seen him. He's like hiding. It's like run. It's like he was hiding in a people fort. Like, nobody even hardly touched him, and he just hunkered down and snuck out of there and
There was a play yesterday where Wentz had three Bears coming at it from the blind side. And maybe he saw one of the guys and did an instinctual freaking 270. Like, so he went three quarters of the way around, spun away from all three guys and ran for like a 15-yard gain, got a first down. I mean, he's got awareness that would you wouldn't expect from, you know, from a second-year quarterback. And their weapons are great. Their running backs are contributing. Their offensive line is playing fine. And their defense is now allowed 9 points to Dallas and 3 points to Chicago in their two games since the bye. If you go back farther than that, they allowed 23 to Denver, but that game was completely out of hand. That was more like an A-plus performance from the defense as well. They allowed 10 to San Francisco. Meanwhile, the offense for the Eagles is scoring over 30 a game comfortably getting over 30 a game. The only game this season where they didn't break 26 points was week 2 at Kansas City when they were their second week in a row on the road. So memo is out. If you expect to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, you need to be scoring 30 points or more. And as I look down their schedule, I don't think the Rams, I don't think Seattle can do it. And I don't think they can do it because I'm very worried about their offensive line getting Russell Wilson killed in this game. But
how many defensive linemen do
the
Eagles have
next week?
How many defensive linemen do the Eagles play? I mean, they're deep.
So
I mean, they're deep too. That terrible line is going to get awful tired, and the Eagles aren't because they rotate guys in so beautifully.
Yep.
That could be a messy game and hopefully it's a little closer for. I'd just like to see a good game here once in a while between the. I'd like to see Seattle do well once in a while here. Like I've backed them so much this year. I don't know if it's all the offensive line or. It seems like it's just Russell Wilson on an island most of the day.
Yeah, and you know, it's in a better season for the Seahawks. He's your proverbial favorite for MVP because he's doing everything for them on offense. But at the same time, like he's out there, he looks like he's wearing a flak jacket. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a shoulder injury, if he has a rib injury, if he's just dealing with all kinds of stuff that they're not disclosing because Seattle and Pete Carroll are sneaky like that. I think we're really talking about Philly continuing their momentum one more week before I get into the, before I flip the script here and go against them when they're at the Rams December 10th. After that game, though, man, dude, if they can get to 11-2 after that Rams game, then they go at the Giants, then they get the Raiders and the Cowboys to finish off the season. So congratulations on the one seed, Philly. You did well this season. You exceeded all expectations, and you've earned the one seed.
Flipping the script and maybe buying very low on a team. As I watched the Chiefs game, I looked ahead. Like, you know, maybe – now that they're completely dead and garbage, and I'm like, there'll be a spot. And I looked to back the Chiefs next week, and then I looked and it was the Jets.
Yeah.
God damn it. Oh my God. I love that matchup. Like, I'm going to have to bet on the Jets again.
Do you know how many times this has happened to me this season with the Jets? It's like a bad joke. Like, they're in great situational spots just constantly.
Every freaking time.
And sure enough, they're Kansas City's laying 3 or 4 on the road, depending on where your shop's got it right now. And I don't know, man. Another great spot to back the Jets. That Jets no cover yesterday against Carolina. That about ruined my morning. Let's recap this from a handicapping perspective. They were 5-point dogs during the week, closed 6-point dogs. They are driving. They're down one, driving. They get to the goal line. Austin Seferian Jenkins has another catch for a touchdown overturned by replay. That guy has the worst luck of anyone who's in professional football this season. Terrible overturn calls. The replay specifically hates Austin Seferian Jenkins for whatever reason. Jets overturn touchdown. They throw it 2 more times. Can't get in. They have to kick a field goal. They go up 2. They proceed to get a stop, get the ball back, and then there's a fumble 6 as they're truying to kill the clock. Luke Kuechly takes it back to the house, and then you're like, okay, well, I got Jets plus 6. Big freaking deal. Like, they're down 5. Like, this can't be the end of the world, right? And they get the ball back again. They go 3 and out again. Like, something just broke, and the whole team broke. And they punt, and they give up a special teams touchdown back-to-back to their defensive touchdown, which seemed impossible, but there we are. And now you're crossing your fingers, hoping to God they get the back door. Panthers missed the 2-point conversion, which kept the back door open for us, plus sixers. The Jets actually go down. They get a touchdown, and did they convert the 2? I can't even remember. Whatever the case was, they closed it to 5, and then you're thinking, ah, thank goodness, they're going to stay inside 6 at least. And but no, not to be. Carolina drives the field with the last 2 minutes of the game, and because they stopped them just short of like the 30, they kicked a 50-yard field goal to take the Panthers cover home, and the Jets just a miserable no cover in that game. So that one stung. You stayed away from the Jets, right?
I wanted to. I had a lucky coin. I can't put Buffalo and the Jets on my card, and honestly, like, I did like Buffalo a little more, so I was pretty happy to put that one on there. I feel like I might be skewed because I'm cheering against the Chiefs, but you ever do that where you feel like you're making a play sometimes based on a future?
Of course. All the time. Like, I do it too much.
I question myself a lot. Like, am I chasing a future by betting this, whatever? Sometimes you just got to let it rip anyway.
No, absolutely. You construct a reality in your head where, like, oh, this future has legs if just this game can go this way and this game can go this way. And then the game shows up and you forget that you had kind of set that in your mind. And you're like, oh, well, this is a game they're going to win. I don't know why, but I just have a feeling. And that's why you got to be careful just handicapping with your gut, and you know, to the degree that a numerical model is even worthwhile this year is debatable. But the Bills were a great side. They handled their business against the Chiefs. They looked great. Tyrod Taylor back in form. And you know, to be honest, like, I felt like they should have won by more. That was like a 16-10 final score. And the Bills left a lot of points on the board, I got to say. They should have won that game going away. And the Bills now head back to Buffalo with renewed playoff hopes to host the 9-2 New England Patriots. I don't have to tell you. You know what I'm going to do. I'm taking points again this week. I believe in the Patriots. I believe they're going to win the AFC. I have full confidence in Belichick and Brady and company to make another run to the Super Bowl, if not win the Super Bowl this season. But this is too many points for what I think will be a pretty tight game. We've consistently seen Buffalo play New England tough over the years. This is their first time facing off this season. Tyrod Taylor and mobile quarterbacks in general have
given them trouble.
They've given them hell. I don't think Buffalo gets a win here, but I feel like this game depends on whichever kicker is making kicks in the fourth quarter. This is a field goal, 3-6 type of final score difference, not 9. So I will happily take outside of a touchdown here to back the Bills at home against the Pats. Am I overstating the likelihood of the Pats making the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, or do you think there's another team out there that can challenge them?
I really wonder about Pittsburgh. What they're all about. They should be a pretty good team. It's like I don't know if they play down to competition or what, or they're just this game. I mean, who do they have?
It's almost like they don't have a good coach, and it's almost like they have a stupid quarterback. I can't put my finger on it, but it's something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't even a look-ahead spot. They get extra rest going to play at Cincinnati, a team they've handled year in and year out, it seems. I don't know if they just overlooked them. Their defense looked like they just a little lackadaisical, a few big plays, and I mean, that's a team they should beat by, 10 points at least. I look at the Bills, the Bills are obviously going to lose to the Patriots. I shouldn't say obviously. You never know what happens in Orchard Park with Bills Mafia and, circling the wagons, but they play, it kind of goes through Miami. They play the Dolphins twice. Let's just say the Patriots let's say the Patriots beat the Bills twice.
Yeah, which reasonable. Yep.
Fair enough. So they're, let's put them at 6-7. Let's say the Bills can get a win at home versus the Colts. They're 7-7. I mean, 9-7, you beat the Miami twice. 9-7 is a wild card spot, possibly, and certainly 8-8 or 7-9 aren't. You have to get it done against the Dolphins, who are probably in quit mode.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins are a disaster. And I don't want to necessarily break this game down, but you see who they're going into the all-time quit off this weekend: Dolphins versus Broncos. Somebody has to win. Before we move on from the Patriots, real quick, I agree with your read, by the way, and the Bills. I got a feeling they're going to come up one spot short because the Ravens and the Chargers both look like they're coming on, and they look like more competent teams. And we'll see with the Ravens tonight. If the Ravens can repeat the kind of effort that they had against Green Bay, then the Bills are going to land like 8-8, and they're going to be one spot out, and it's going to be sad for Bills Mafia. And God knows what they're going to do with Tyrod Taylor in the offseason. But before we move off the Patriots, I was reading
See, they put Marty Bennett on IR?
I did, yes. I did. To the surprise of very few, I think. But that was pretty funny, given all the hubbub that went into the collusion stupid talk that was going on. Anyway, I was looking at Mike Reese, who covers the Pats for the
The Patriots. If you find O.J. Simpson with blood on his hands, you're not assuming he got a paper cut.
That's fair. That's a good point. Nothing like comparing Bill Belichick to O.J. Simpson, but there you go. Mike Reese, who covers the Pats for ESPN, he does like a good breakdown of the snap count, who's playing for the Patriots and stuff. And I was reading it today, and looking at these guys who are playing on the defensive line, and it is truly unbelievable that they are playing the type of defense that they're playing. By all accounts, they fixed the problem, right? I mean, you've seen enough Patriots games in primetime and whatnot over the last couple of weeks. It looks like they've righted the ship. Let me play a little game. I'm going to give you four names, and you tell me which one of these is a guy that did not take more than 20 snaps for the Patriots on Sunday. Okay. All right. Eric Lee, Adam Butler, Lawrence Guy, Ricky Jean Francois, Trevor Riley. Which one of those guys played less than 20 snaps for the Patriots on Sunday?
I know Francois played at least that. I'm not even going to get a guy. Let's go with Guy.
Lawrence Guy played 20 snaps. It ironically was Ricky Jean Francois only played 4. In fact, it looks like with Malcolm Brown back in the mix, he's probably going to lose his hold on the 46-man game day roster. But
you're
like,
going to maybe throw in a made-up name.
I was going to.
I thought maybe there's a made-up name.
On the middle. Adam Butler is a real guy. Eric Lee is a real guy. Lawrence Guy is a real guy. They literally are getting it
done. Guy's just guy.
They're really getting it done with just another guys. And here we are now. Patriots have fixed their defense. You know, golly, if Matt Patricia isn't a magician, and I'm not sure. I'm sure if Belichick and Patricia working together to get this done is part of the issue. But, you know, of course, some of it, like, it doesn't hurt that they're playing the likes of Miami, who, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but they clearly seem to have quit on their coach. And I don't know how you bring Gase back at this point, but maybe they do. But, yeah, the Patriots defense of late has been holding teams to 17, 8, 16, 13, 7, 17, 14. Those are the last seven games conceded points. They're averaging 13 points a game conceded, which is crazy given that they were giving up about 40 points a game in the first 4 games of the season. But here we are. Did you have any thoughts on my?
Do you remember when Kansas City was going to go to the Super Bowl and then the Patriots weren't?
Oh, of course, Patriots were going to make the playoffs. The Bills.
They were probably contracting. I believe they were going to contract the team.
Yeah, right. It was they were going to break up the band. I remember it well. And now here we sit, and the Patriots are almost certainly going to get the one seed, and the road to the AFC playoffs goes through Foxborough. Looks like the Jags took a step back with their loss yesterday to the Cardinals. So Jags are now kind of firmly entrenched in the 3, Pittsburgh in the 2, Patriots in the 1, with the caveat that the Patriots and the Steelers are going to play each other in a couple weeks. So yeah, you're going to see in the Jags. Let's just pretend that the Ravens get the 6th seed. Let's pretend that the Chargers either catch the Chiefs outright and get the West, or the Chargers get the 5th seed. This leaves Tennessee the odd men out in the AFC, which I think is probably happening. I don't love Tennessee's chances of getting in with the way their coach is operating that team right now. So, yeah, you could have the Jags hosting the Ravens, who they already beat 44-0 or 44-7 or whatever in London, and then going to the Steelers to play Ben Roethlisberger, who they intercepted 5 times. Does that potential scenario, if you get Jags rematches against the Ravens and the if you get Jags rematches against the Ravens and the Steelers, do you think they have life as far as an AFC hopeful?
I don't think the odds of him getting 5 interceptions again is very good.
That's a good point, especially with off a bye. Yeah, that's fair. But still, like,
it's funny in my head. Like, I can see him losing to the, you know, anybody. I could see him losing to the Ravens badly, but I could also see him. But then I can see him like beating the Patriots.
Yeah,
you know, I had this scenario in my head with like this. I had this scenario in my head where just they can't figure out, you know, the Jags defensive backfield. Like the Patriots are just completely stymied, and Bortles leads them sloppily with like 2, you know, really shaky 4th down conversions for a winning field goal in the AFC title game.
Oh, that would be something.
And it's disgusting.
That would be something. It doesn't seem impossible. It really doesn't. I would say, and you know, this is, I think I disagree a little bit with some of the better NFL cappers that I know. They are eagerly waiting to fade Blake Bortles and the Jaguars the first playoff opportunity they get. But the Jags defense really has me believing. I know they gave up that huge touchdown that made a huge, you know, big difference in the Cardinals game. But they managed to score points again. I mean, the Jags defense finds, you know, they have a nose for the end zone, which is pretty amazing. They had talent up and down. I think with Jalen Ramsey a little bit healthier and with the playoff atmosphere, I'm probably going to be a Jags backer come January. So that'll be fun. Betting hard-earned money on Blake Bortles to win a playoff game, huh?
Yeah.
Jags this week get Indianapolis. We saw what happened last time they played each other. They blanked the Colts, what, 21-0 or something crazy? They're 10.5-point favorites at home against the Colts. I don't see any reason to get involved in this game. The Chargers, real quick, before we move off of them, got to give a huge recognition to the Mill, who called out the opportunity to get involved in Chargers to win the AFC West last weekend. The price of the Chargers 5 days ago, was it Wednesday we recorded that pod? The price was about plus 870 to win the West. I may have made a little wager during the podcast on that particular angle. And it's down to like plus 200 or plus 150 right now. Chargers sit one game back on the Chiefs with one game left to play the Chiefs head to head. So presumably, you know, they win that game, it's a dead heat. Chiefs in a utter free fall. Do you want to talk about the Chiefs or the Chargers first?
Oh, let's start positive.
It's Chargers.
Yeah, I mean,
they were amazing. The Chargers were amazing. Keenan Allen, man. Thanksgiving. The Chargers were unbelievable. And even winning what, 28-6 or whatever, it felt like they won that game 40-0, 50-0. That was really something else. Like their kicker got hurt, so they couldn't kick field goals, or they couldn't, you know, and they stalled in the inside the 10-yard line a couple times in the first half. That thing could have gotten much more out of hand much sooner. And Cowboys weren't anywhere in the same. They weren't even in the same state as the Chargers playing that game. So can the Chargers keep this up, or are they burning their candle out too soon?
They are a huge favorite. I mean, they need to obviously get stuff done in games like this. But, boy, there's people lining up to back the Jets right now, and I'm actually one of them. I'm not going to be the guy that bets the Chargers minus 13.5. But, you know, I also might have a future bet in the 700-800 range.
I went even crazier. I got Chargers 70-1 to win the Super Bowl because I like burning money. Yeah, I think I did that the week before they lost to New England, and then they lost to Jacksonville, and I was like, great, good, way to grab a good number there. Well, and then lo and behold, they beat Buffalo. They beat Dallas, and they're in the driver's seat for the four seed. I got to say, because they don't have the easiest
schedule, but I mean, it's not bad, tough.
Man.
I mean, beat the Browns at home. The Redskins. If the Redskins lose Thursday, I believe they're eliminated.
Right. Because
the NFC is so top heavy, and if not, it'll be like, we have to win out with a bunch of help. The Redskins might be dead man walking, going to the West Coast two Sundays from now. And then you got the tilt. I mean, it could be Chargers, Chiefs, could be, you know, sitting at the same record. And honestly, the Raiders are sitting at the same record as the Chargers. It might be the Chargers and the Raiders on New Year's Eve for all the cookies in the West. Because I don't know what the Raiders schedule. I'm not super keen on the Raiders right now, but, They're playing, you know, winning football, I guess.
Wow, great.
I mean, the injuries there, but I mean, they play the Giants. Oh, man. The Raiders got the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Chargers. Raiders have a tougher schedule, but they, you know, they're right there too. But there's definitely the Chargers having the Skins, Browns, and Jets on the schedule.
That's, that gets them to 8 wins by my math. You're talking about an 8-6 team with games against KC and Oakland outstanding. And that would be something.
If Oakland takes a fall here and they fall out of contention, man, and it's, you know, you're looking at the final game of the season, who do the Chiefs have to close it out?
Broncos.
So you have the Chiefs at the Broncos and the Chargers at home with the Raiders, or two teams that are probably quitting. And if it's a case where they both need the win and the Chargers have, you know, probably goes to whoever has the tie break.
Yeah, interesting. So you're right. The Raiders, the Raiders have to win this week against the Giants. They have to beat the Chiefs or else they're pretty much dead dogs walking. They got Dallas. You mentioned it, Dallas, Philly, and then the last game against LA on New Year's Eve. That'll be interesting. Yeah, I'm still searching. I don't see on the schedule what of the week 17 games is going to be the one that decides a division yet. It could be the Chargers Raiders. It's not crazy. I'll tell you what though, like it's a bummer that that game's going to be in the StubHub Center in LA, because there's going to be 20,000 Raiders fans there and one Chargers fan. So that's a little concerning, I guess.
I know. They should. What if the Chargers win a division, are they going to host? What if the Chargers win a division? let's start there. Let's say, because there's nothing saying the Chargers can't win out. Boy, they're going to lose out. No, we're so keen on our bet they're going to lose out, aren't they?
But I know. Well, yeah, they're going to lose to the Browns. They're not going to lose.
What if they host a playoff game in that bandbox? Like, they'd have to do something about that. You can't. Boy, just the lost revenue. It's how many people crazy. Does that hold?
Like 20,000.
20,000 people.
That's so much money. They've given back. I mean, the Spanos family and the Chargers as an organization has given back. I'm gonna say conservatively, like $30 or $40 million in ticket revenue probably this season. They've tried to make up for it by charging about $100 a car to park at the StubHub Center, but everyone just takes Uber there. It's truly unbelievable that they made this move. But here we are. I mean, even yesterday in the Rams Saints game, when the Saints did something good, you could tell that there were equal to, if not more, Saints fans in the Coliseum for the Rams.
Well, that's the thing too. I was just gonna say they can't probably move it to the Coliseum because, I mean, just the agreements that are in place, and then
right. I don't
there's probably going to be a Rams game that weekend. I don't see
that's
the Rams.
I don't see
there could be two home games in LA that weekend that nobody cares about.
Holy smokes!
Because they're building up to the Rose Bowl. Maybe they go play. Maybe they go play in the Rose Bowl.
That's not crazy. That's interesting. I'm gonna do some research on this because you've piqued my interest in this for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if they're allowed. If what the rules are, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if they're allowed to move the game. But boy, just how many people does the Rose Bowl hold?
The Rose Bowl can hold like 80,000, but it's in pretty bad shape as far as high profile.
92,000 people. I just Googled. Okay. So if you could, for a playoff game, man, you would think you could at least. Let's say you sell even half of that stadium out.
It's not crazy.
30,000 extra tickets.
Yeah, not crazy.
You could buy a lot of, I don't know what football teams buy, football players.
You can buy a lot of football players with that. Yeah, Jesus. No, the other ones that I'm seeing as potential, the primetime week 17 spot, you could see Carolina, Atlanta playing for a playoff spot. That would be pretty exciting. Those two teams are on collision course to be both have 10 or 11 wins heading into that week 17 game. We saw Carolina win the first tilt. So if they end up having equal records or Carolina stays one game ahead of Atlanta, Atlanta could potentially win their way in. Jacksonville, Tennessee could be a division decider week 17. Granted, the Tennessee has Tennessee's. I'm out on Tennessee. I'm just cool on these cool clowns.
Early in the season, a couple weeks ago, when they were having, there was some success had by either one of those teams. I looked at that game and thought, maybe it decides between who's in as a division winner and who's in as a wild card. It might turn out that that's a win and get in. Like that's an extended playoff game. play-in game because it could be. If you don't win the division, you're not getting a wild card. That's going to Baltimore or Buffalo or something along those lines.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, same could be said for Carolina, Atlanta too. Unless we see Seattle fade, the winner could have a wild card and the loser could be sent home from that week 17 match. That'll be fun, man. I'm excited now. I don't really have much more for week 13 looking ahead here.
You kind of talk shit about the Rose Bowl, but Google them. Of the 1,284 Google reviews, it's got a 4.4 star rating. That's a good quantity for the quantity of reviews. That's a good rating. So
it's a good rating.
Maybe where you get some hate mail from the
parade committee.
Fun fact, my wife marched in that parade.
Oh, wow.
She was a band nerd in high school.
Oh, the Rose Parade. But don't be besmirched by my opinion of the Rose Parade. The Rose Parade is freaking awesome. I wake up on New Year's Day, hungover, sit in bed. It's you. New Year's Day, by the way, I don't know if you've never been to California. We were talking recently, and
I've got it surrounded.
You got to make a trip out to California one of these days. But without exception, New Year's Day in Southern California is like perfect, crisp, cool, sunny, bluebird sky day. Like, I don't know how it works out, but every single year it's like that. And there's nothing better than like just crashing on,
on the couch. Apologies to you who are listening to this in Calgary.
Yeah. Apologies to our friend Mill, who's going to be dealing with minus 60 degrees on New Year's Day in Calgary. The weather is always picture perfect. It's so great sitting and watching the Rose Parade and while you're hungover, drinking your coffee and your hangover eggs, and then you get to watch the first of the bowl games kicks off at like 9 a.m. West Coast time. It's just the best. There's nothing, not besmirching the Rose Bowl per se. It's just that the facility itself and that Coliseum goes, this is the same can be said for the Coliseum. It's just not a very amenable venue for hosting a high profile football game just because they have like no corporate boxes. They have facilities that are meant for college football games, not pro games, and so that it's tough to put on the same type of event or broadcast that you can get when you have a real stadium. It's pretty funny that you could be talking about home playoff games in LA at the Coliseum and the StubHub Center in January. Go figure. They should have built that stadium in Inglewood a little faster.
It was up to no good.
I know. That project is cool, but it is going to take a lifetime to get finished. And I may or may not have some inside info on that we're not going to get into, but that's beside the point. I guess I don't really have anything else for these week 13 look aheads. I haven't really capped the totals in my head or on paper yet at all. I would say Tampa Bay is probably a decent spot to keep an eye on. Green Bay, what we've seen with Green Bay has been perfect up and down and up and down from Brent Hundley. And if he's the quarterback, which is not a guarantee, I guess there was some clips of Aaron Rodgers throwing some pretty nice looking deep balls for Green Bay. I could see if Hundley starts, he goes and he looks more like the Hundley that played against the Lions and the Hundley that we saw against Baltimore than the Hundley we saw last night and against the Bears. So I may be into Tampa Bay. You can hear
it's around about, the pick, isn't it?
I think it's off the board because they're waiting on the
confirmation. Yeah, I did see some. What's
it was
the,
a pick earlier, yeah.
Isn't he just because he IR'd? When is he eligible to come back?
I'm not really one.
I don't think he can come back. I don't know. Maybe we should look into that.
Just because you don't want him to come back doesn't mean he can't.
I want to. I just know for the, as far as the IR rules go, like you have once you're on the IR, you have to stay there for a certain long time.
Okay. Actually, there is one more game that I wanted to pick your brain on, and then I want to lay out a conspiracy theory for you, and you can tell me how crazy I am. Right. So, Atlanta, first of all, I know you're cool on the Saints. I've heard you, and you've made some great points in our conversations. The Saints have some weaknesses that maybe Achilles heel type weaknesses. How do you feel about Atlanta? Are you warming up to them sneaking into the playoffs and being a contender for the NFC, at least.
Their offensive play calling has gotten better.
It has.
They bottomed out
against the Patriots.
That game against the Patriots where they're running jet sweeps in the inside the five and some incredulous shit. Like they put a two-year-old in charge of a Madden controller and just mashed buttons and started calling plays. It was they're off. I mean, because their defense isn't, you know, they don't have a bad defense by any means, but they're an offensive team. They've been known to set. That's how they, you know, that's how they got their success last year. They scored points. They went up and down the field on you, and they put you in a bag, and then they had two good running backs to grind out the game at the end, and you can't come back when they're going to knock out a 6-minute drive with those two running backs. That is, you know, the running back injury there too. That's tough, and I don't know why they're not throwing it to Coleman more. Look what the Saints have done with Kamara as far as just getting him the ball in space. They should be doing that with Coleman all the time. But that said, they did win. They did cover. That was a bad beat if you had Buccaneers, I think, because it seemed like they should have just been able to get by and as far as like stopping them to try to, you know, the Buccaneers should have been trying to get the ball back, and they definitely let Atlanta kind of have their way with them right at the end there. And,
yeah, well, I didn't the want Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers are not.
But it's
good.
Not like the Buccaneers are good. But still, I thought Tampa getting double digits might cash for somebody. That wasn't the case. Just more huge favorites continue to win.
Yeah. So speaking of favorites continuing to win, they hung Atlanta as a favorite this week against your Minnesota Vikings.
That's about right. I'd put those. They're very equals. I don't know what your power rankings say, if you've updated them or if you've thrown them in the trash after you get so mad at the NFL.
Yeah, threw them in the trash. But the Atlanta, basically they're saying, you know, 3-point home field advantage. These teams are even Steven. So we're going to lay Atlanta -3, or we're going to hang Atlanta -3 out there. Minnesota going to win this game? They're getting some early public support.
It's something I'm going to stay away from and just hope for. I think they're a slightly better team, just maybe by a point or two. Like there might be a point or two of value here. If there's a 3.5, like if some Atlanta money comes in and they give you that hook, I might take some Vikes just because I see it as a close game. I think both teams, I can't make a case for either team blowing each other out here. But just, yeah. I mean, the way Keenum's played and with the running game in Minnesota, the defense, and then the, you know, resurgence of the offense in Atlanta, it should be a pretty good game.
Yeah. Atlanta is playing with their back against the wall. That concerns me a little bit because now the Vikings have a little breathing room. This is the second of 3 road games in a row for the Vikings. They were at Detroit, they are at Atlanta, and then they go at Carolina. So this is the meat of the Vikings schedule right now. You would think the Vikings probably drop one of these games. It being the second game in a week, you know, in a row on the road is not unrealistic. I will say this, though. We have seen time and again the Thursday to Sunday rest
extra
window
rest
has been huge.
Yeah.
Teams getting that extra rest.
I forget about that, the 10 days.
Teams that get extra rest, that it's not an official bye where they get a full week off, where they're just kind of dissociating from football. Like the extra days to recover and regroup has been huge. If they had played Detroit on Sunday and won, and now they're turning around and going at Atlanta, I would almost certainly be laying 3 with Atlanta. The extra rest makes me pause. The total on this is 47, and it's getting some overplay. Probably looking for the under here, and it's scary because it's going to be on that fast turf. Atlanta's scoring points with ease right now.
It's Julio or Thielen just putting up a touchdown Right.
And until there's zeros on the clock, under 47 is not going to feel good, no matter what's the score in the game, because you could have just bananas. As we saw in the freaking Minnesota-Detroit game, last freaking 40 seconds of the first half, they scored 14 points for crying out loud. And by the way, the refereeing in that Minnesota-Detroit game was something else, huh? The Vikings beat the Lions and the Zebras. It was very impressive.
That was some brutal stuff. I didn't even want to come on here and just be a homer bitch about that. But the 10-day thing is huge. If I did have to take a side, it would be Minnesota. Homerism aside, just getting points against a pretty, you know, two teams that are pretty evenly matched. I'd say you get 3 points. If you can give me 3.5 and some extra rest,
why not?
I'd probably take that money. And then going back to Rodgers.
Yeah.
They put him on IR. You have to be out for six weeks. Eight weeks.
Eight? Oh, man. He's not even close.
Yeah. So, like, he can return week 15.
At the earliest. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't
what,
know
what are people talking about?
Fitzmagic? Okay.
I don't know. Like maybe Jameis Winston's playing? That's possible. I haven't looked hard at this at all yet. If it's Jameis I'm staying far away from that game. So let's wrap this up and put this pot up and get the people some Monday action here. You have a side or a total tonight, by the way? Monday Night Football? This is the D-Gen special, man. Tom Savage versus Joe Flacco.
Field goal props.
Field goals. Over field goal. How many? What are you getting? Over 3.5?
Oh, let's see what we got. We're going to go Baltimore's first drive results in a made field goal.
Plus 420. Oh, nice. I like that.
A little on over 45.5 for the longest one, too, because you got Tucker the Trucker, the opera singer, kicking them from downtown.
They got to be that's got to be like a major plus money. I mean, minus money deal. 45?
Minus 115.
Minus 115. That's it, huh? Okay.
Max play.
I'm surprised by that. Matt, I'm going to – you know what?
This 130 units on the Baltimore again.
Baltimore max bomb, field goal over 45. Freaking Tucker can hit from 55 in that place. Is there any wind or weather to be worried about for field goal props?
Get that too in depth. I guess when I place a $20 prop during a
podcast, after seeing Pittsburgh hit like a 53 yarder yesterday and that terrible kicking stadium.
Yeah, let's add like 2 minutes to the podcast and talk about the coaching decisions by McCarthy and who's the Jekyllhead down in Jacksonville, Marone?
Doug Marone.
Is it Doug Marone?
No.
Yeah, Doug Marone. Yeah, it's Doug Marone.
Doug Marone.
Yeah, you have Brett Hundley and Blake Bortles and a long ways to go to win the game. And you throw passes, you go out of bounds. We're going to give them the ball at the 30 with 30 seconds to go and they're just going to run three times and kick. I mean, they had to get a play or two. But you gave them the opportunity, and they both lost the game. Retire McCarthy. You're the worst.
So
those are dumb. Those are dumb situational coaching. I mean, these guys get paid millions, and it's one of those things. It's easy to say from the sidelines, but just know what the hell you're doing.
So two things have become extremely apparent to me watching Packers games in primetime, sans Aaron Rodgers. The first is that roster is depleted from talent.
Yeah, their cornerbacks got picked up at the YMCA last week.
They do not have, and Dom Capers has probably the least effective scheme to even help those guys out. So that their defense is is hopeless. Their roster is thin. Aaron Rodgers is covering up for just brutal warts on the organization as a whole.
Like genital warts. Like not even close. Like, not no, even yeah. like, oh, your yeah. aunt had a weird wart in her arm. I mean, these are the ones that someone gets on the vajayjay.
Yeah, these are bad. And, bad warts. And maybe no more so than Mike McCarthy. He has been so exposed without Rodgers in there. He is calling some of the most questionable game plans and making in-game decisions that that are just indefensible. The game against the Lions, where he had 2 weeks to prepare and they came out looking like that, was just that was inexcusable. Some of the decisions in the game last night, as you mentioned, you got Brent Hundley and, you know, you're on the road. Like, why are you giving your opponent, a short field to kick a game winning field goal? You know, there's so many I've lost track at this point. And it's pretty clear that McCarthy needs to go. So
all 70,000 of you owners need to call an owners meeting.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So let's say they do the right thing.
And by the way, they move on. 1 mile an hour winds right now in Baltimore. Oh, perfect. And looks like they're calling for some dark. It's going to be dark. 41 and dark.
Okay. All right. So field goal max prop on 130 unit bet on. Actually, we only have to lay 115, right?
Yep, 115 to 100.
Okay. So let's say the Packers do the right thing and say they fire Mike McCarthy. Who's the right coach to bring in to pair with Aaron Rodgers to get him some Super Bowls in his prime? I mean, you obviously don't want to see it. Obviously, so maybe you're the wrong person.
Are you trying to goad me into some? are we going to the Tennessee jokes?
Hey, as a Vikings fan, what's the nightmare offseason scenario? They fire McCarthy and hear that the Packers are finalizing a deal with what coach is your nightmare scenario?
Oof, I can't. Who's the hot OC right now?
Probably McDaniels.
Yeah, McDaniels. It's always, I don't think Patricia's going anywhere.
Mm-mm, I don't think so either. I don't think you want a D coordinator with Aaron Rodgers anyway. But
he is the offensive coordinator.
Patricia?
Rodgers.
Rodgers is.
He audibles at the line. He runs the play that he needs to. And
That's a good point. So I was thinking about this last night, and because I'm done with McCarthy, I really want to see them move on. Because you obviously have a different opinion on this because you're a Vikings fan. That's fine. I would like to see them pair Rodgers with something. And then I was also thinking, like, man, like, what would be like a storyline that would really like shake up the league in 2018?
God, I'm just like, we're turn my mic off here for this garbage.
Okay. All right. No problem.
Go ahead.
This is going to be quite the soliloquy, so you might as well. So I'm thinking, like, okay, the NFL obviously needs to snap some headlines. They need to draw people's attention. They are struggling right now in more ways than you can count. I would contend that it's mostly based on the quality of the product and the quality of the broadcast, which is really pretty poor right now. There are other factors as well, obviously. If I'm writing the scripts for the NFL, if this is all just a scripted reality TV show, I am writing in some pretty spectacular drama for the upcoming offseason to kind of keep our sport in the mind of the fans and recapture some of the intrigue and interest in the NFL. And I am scripting a messy divorce, which I believe to be possibly going on behind the scenes as we speak in New England, between Belichick and Kraft. And I think that I don't have strong evidence for this. I've talked to a couple people who are kind of in the know, and they've given me enough of this is plausible that Belichick could be figuring out his exit strategy, that I'm willing to kind of throw this out there even as a concept. Let's say Belichick has had enough of his time in Foxborough. And you know, one of the reasons I say this is, like, what's going on with the Patriots, like, roster. Like, he's kind of constructed this really fragile roster. They have no young players. They've whiffed on their draft prospects, or they've traded their picks away now for so many years that the cupboard is kind of bare. And I'm looking at this, and like, people like Colin Cowherd was given Belichick all this credit, like, oh, he's figured out an inefficiency in bringing in players from other teams and trading away picks because you can't develop players anymore with the new collective bargaining rules, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but another potential read is that, like, he knows he's on his way out of New England, and he's not going to leave a cupboard that's fully stocked to threaten him wherever his next stop is. And I will also say that it was pretty clear that Belichick was looking to try to get Brady to kind of wrap it up after this year and or move on from Brady, find another home for him, and put Garoppolo in as the franchise starter going forward. Because I figure Belichick probably has, what, five or so more years left of coaching.
Brady has that in him?
I don't personally, but I think he's probably got two more years, maybe three. It seemed to me like Belichick was sending a pretty clear message when he has his press conference after they ship Garoppolo, and he's all like crying because he was such a great guy to have in the locker room, and like, it was bizarre. Like, there was no reason he would be doing that other than trying to send a message that, like, this was not my decision to send Garoppolo out of here. Like, Kraft has decided that we are going to have Brady finish his career in New England, and that is that. And I'm guessing that more than anything, that's kind of the nucleation for.
Boy, I thought divorce. I thought it was a long tweet you sent out.
I thought when
he wrapped the podcast 10 minutes ago, and then I started adding on, and then yeah. I read a lot of the same stuff. I see a lot
yeah.
of this. I
mean, yeah.
It could. You never know.
Yeah, and I mean, like, before this weekend, I was thinking,
I like him to go back to Cleveland. Go back to Cleveland, Bill.
I was thinking that too, but that organization is such a dumpster fire, and I actually think he has an axe to grind with Cleveland. I don't think he feels like he was treated failure there, and I don't think he will ever go back because he's a vindictive SOB. But I thought before this latest thing dawned on me, I was thinking he was probably headed to like the Giants because we know McAdoo's out, and we know he's always had a hard on for the Giants for whatever reason. And I was kind of like, oh, that would make sense, but you know, I don't see him hitching his wagon to an over-the-hill Eli Manning to try to win Super Bowls. That's because the Giants really are a rebuilding project. They need a young guy in there who's got some ideas and some energy, not a Bill Belichick type of figure. A team that is ready to win Super Bowls with the healthy quarterback is Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And I thought, oh my goodness, if they get rid of McCarthy, if they bring in Belichick, like, this is the reality TV show the NFL wants. Like, you have Belichick and Rodgers, the would be immediate favorites to win the NFC in 2018. Brady still entrenched in top of the AFC with the Patriots. You look up and down, there's no challengers that are imminently coming in the next couple of years in the AFC. There's enough flexibility there. It's Green Bay, the home of Vince Lombardi. We know how much Belichick loves to, you know, to look at the history books and holds himself up to Lombardi. What better way to surpass a legend like Lombardi in terms of number of championships than in Green Bay itself with a quarterback that wasn't Tom Brady? Prove you can do it without Brady. Prove that you can do it with a team that we all see right now is just needs a fresh coach, fresh perspective. And so I'm thinking NFL reality TV scriptwriters are writing Belichick to the Green Bay Packers in the offseason. And then McDaniels takes over for the Pats. And Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta, we get Rodgers and Belichick versus McDaniels and Brady for all of the eyeballs in the United States. Am I crazy?
Yeah, I hope they just maybe contract both teams.
You're not interested.
LA. Okay. No, I can. It's just far enough out there to be believable.
I told my wife this whole story, and
I feel like I can see you like just scribbling in notebooks, like just wildly at like 4 a.m.
I know, man. I'm getting this mail from Carol in HR, but there's no Carol in HR. You know, and they Pepe Silvia is dropping me notes about Belichick wants out of Foxborough.
I was thinking, but yeah, no, Fight Club or find some of those notebooks. I am Jack's complete lack of surprise.
Well, my wife, this whole story and her reaction. I told my wife this whole story last night, and her reaction was, "You need to spend less time on the internet." And I was like, "Yeah, that's true." Yeah, probably. That's true. I need to spend less time on the internet. So with that, that was my conspiracy theory for the day. When
let's put it on that strange note.
On that strange note. Let's have a good let's have a good Monday night. I'm on the under tonight. You're on the field goals. Let's just get like, I don't know what, 18 field goals, something like that, or 12 field goals.
18 field goals would be too much.
So, yeah, we can do 12 though, right? We can get like
12 would be 36.
36. I'm good.
Count my threes for you.
I'm good. I'm 36 gets me there. So 12 field goals are under, and we're good. All right, man. Have a great Monday, and we'll talk Wednesday. We're bringing on another special guest on Wednesday. Another new voice that you guys may or may not know from gambling Twitter. He's been white hot in NFL and NBA. Just super nice and super interesting guy that's going to have some great stories for us. So look forward to Wednesday's pod. And with that, we enter the home stretch of the NFL regular season. Good luck, my man.